Human beings are social creatures. We form relationships and we are dependent and interdependent on one another. We are driven by our nature to form social bonds. And the key to building and maintaining these social bonds is communication. And an often overlooked component of communication is listening. Even the most eloquent speaker is irrelevant if there is no one to listen to them. They are just a tree falling in a forest. Listening is a skill that requires development. And I'd like to start off this morning by sharing a personal story about listening. This story took place many years ago when my daughter was young. She was late 3, early 4 years old. And my wife and daughter and I were down in Alabama visiting my family for Christmas. And as we're packing up to come home, my mother pulled me aside. And she said to me, "I'm worried about your marriage." And what went through my head was, does she know something? I don't know. And I said, "What are you talking about?" And she said, "Your daughter told me that you and your wife fight a lot." And I went, "Well, yeah, I mean, we have normal disagreements about things, but we don't fight in front of the child. We would never do that. So I don't know what you're talking about." And because I didn't know what she was talking about, I just put it out of my mind and we drove on home. Some time goes past, and my wife, daughter, and I are in the kitchen of our home. It's a Sunday night, and my wife and I are talking. We're planning through the coming week, something, you know, we did every week, looking at our schedules, making sure childcare was taken care of, see who had doctor's appointments, the normal stuff, just planning through the week. And as we're there, I look over at our daughter, and she is weeping. She's got tears in her eyes, which are all puffy, and her face is red, and she's going like that. I go, "Sweetheart, what is wrong?" And she goes, "Stop fighting." And I went, "We're not fighting. We're just talking." And it took me a little while to figure out that her listening skills hadn't developed to the point that she knew the difference between talking and fighting. She was used to us talking to her in the sing-songy voice that parents do around kids. "Hey, how are you doing?" And when she saw us communicating in what is really a flat and low voice, "Okay, on Tuesday I'm doing this, you're doing that," she interpreted as fighting. So we had a long talk about this. I also had a talk with my mother, too, that we weren't fighting. As I said, the ability to listen is a skill, which my daughter at that point in time had not developed, and the ability to listen is also extremely valuable to us. Communication experts have identified over two dozen distinct categories of listening. We listen in various ways for different purposes. For example, the way someone listens for their name to be called at Starbucks is completely different than the way one listens when they are enjoying the symphony. Of all these different types of listening, the earliest listening that we engage in is called discriminative listening. This is the first listening skill we acquire when we are born. And some would say we begin this skill even before we are born, which is why some people play music or talk to a baby in the womb. Discriminative listening is learning to differentiate between different sounds. A child may listen for the difference between their mother's voice and their father's voice, or the voices of others. Or it's learning to differentiate between a voice and the sound of a door slamming. Adults also use this discriminative listening when, for example, their child is crying, and they learn to discriminate to know the difference between, well, a cry of pain or a cry of hunger or just being fussy. Another type of listening is informational listening. With informational listening, we are simply trying to understand information that is being conveyed to us. An example of this is a student listening to a lecture and taking notes. Or maybe it would be one of you sharing a recipe with somebody else. We're listening for the information coming to us. We are mining information. Possibly the most important kind of listening is called critical listening. And here a person not only listens, but critically questions and analyzes and evaluates what is being said. The critical listener is able to synthesize this new information into something new. Now, these types of listening that I mentioned so far, and there are many more, are examples of active listening. And the opposite of active listening, of course, is inactive listening. And we find this when a listener is, oh, let's say, physically present, but not mentally engaged. Now, I could go on and on about listening, but for now, I would like to turn to our scripture, because it is about listening. On the church's calendar, today marks the final Sunday before the start of Lent. And this day, which is known as Transfiguration Sunday, celebrates Jesus' transfiguration on a mountain. We find this moment described in detail in our reading from the Gospel of Luke. And we also have it in living color in the Transfiguration window, which I have a great view of from right here. The choir does as well. So come down at the end of the service and look up at this wonderful window. In our scripture reading, we are told that Jesus takes with him Peter, James, and John, and they go up a mountain to pray. Now, Luke has told us that there are three different types of followers of Jesus. There are the disciples, and the disciples is a large group of people who are committed to learning from Jesus. They're like his fan club. And out of this group of disciples, Jesus has appointed 12 to be apostles. And of these 12, three, Peter, James, and John, seem to make up an inner circle, the earliest disciples to be called. If you recall, Peter, James, and John were fishermen, and they were business partners in their fishing venture. And then the last group is the multitudes, the crowds. These are the people who come to hear Jesus, to be cured by him, to be healed. They're just the crowds out there. So we're told that Jesus takes with him just three apostles, Peter, James, and John, up a mountain to pray. And while he is praying on that mountain, something happens, something that's hard to describe. Jesus changes. His face changes. His clothes become bright white. They glow. And we call this Jesus' transfiguration. And then Jesus is suddenly accompanied by two men, Moses and Elijah, and they're talking to him. And then Luke tells us that while all this is going on, Peter and the others have fallen asleep. While Jesus was praying, they've fallen asleep. We will see this again on the night that Jesus is arrested in the Garden of Gethsemane when the disciples fall asleep. But here, they sleep, but they do wake up. And when they wake up, they see Jesus transfigured. Luke tells us, in his glory. And they see Moses and Elijah. And as they are starting to disperse, Peter has an idea. He says, "Master, it's great that we are here. Let us build three tents, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." And this turns out to be not Peter's greatest idea. Because while he's saying that, this cloud overshadows everyone on top of the mountain, and a voice comes out of the cloud saying, "This is my son, my chosen. Listen to him." And then all goes back to how it had been when they first got to the mountain. Moses and Elijah are gone. Jesus is no longer transfigured. We call an event like this a theophany, a moment when God becomes visible. Think of Moses and the burning bush. A theophany is the ultimate mountaintop experience. So just looking back at what has happened, Jesus has gone up the mountain to pray. Jesus is transformed. He is joined by Moses and Elijah, who are two heroes of the Old Testament. Each of them, as you recall, had their own mountaintop experiences. Moses on Mount Sinai when God gave him the law. And Elijah on another mountain when he is fleeing for his life and hiding in a cave on that mountain. And he's surrounded by an earthquake and wind and fire. But God comes to him as a still, small voice. And Peter, seeing the three of them up there, has this grand idea to build three tents or booths, maybe a hut or a structure, we don't know. Because he sees Moses and Elijah, these two heroes of the faith, and decides that they need to hold this moment in time. Here on top of the mountain, they need to build this living museum to the faith. And people would certainly come up the mountain to learn from these spiritual greats. Now, remember, Peter, James, and John are Jewish. They had been raised on the stories of Moses and Elijah. This is their tradition. Moses represents the law. Elijah represents the prophets. The law and the prophets are the foundation of Jewish belief. But before Peter can further develop this plan, he's interrupted. A third party intervenes. It is God. A cloud covers the mountain and envelops all who are up there. And out of the cloud, a voice speaks. And it says, "This is my son, my chosen. Listen to him." And then the cloud is gone, as are Moses and Elijah, and all is back to how it had been. So what did God mean by saying, "This is my son"? Listen to him. Well, first, God clearly identifies Jesus as being his son, his chosen son. The disciples, they are witnesses to this. They should not have any doubt about who Jesus is. They heard God speak. And Jesus' identity revolves around his being the Son of God. Secondly, God commands, listen to him. What does this mean? Were they not listening before? Or had they been engaged in inactive listening? You know, somebody talks, but somebody else isn't listening. Or is God's emphasis of this command on him? Listen to him, directing Peter and the others, that their attention should focus on Jesus above everything else. Could it be that Moses and Elijah, who were beloved figures from the past, who were remarkable leaders who would be impossible to ignore, could it be that maybe God is saying, listen to Jesus from now on? Is God pointing those followers of Jesus in a different direction, away from the past and toward a new future? Just as Moses had led his people out of Egypt to a land of freedom, is Jesus now the one to lead his people to a new existence, to a new glory? God said, listen to him. And what does listening to Jesus imply for us today? Well, first of all, thanks to the gospel writers, we have the words of Jesus recorded on the page. We can listen to these words by reading these words ourselves. And when we listen, our listening, in modern parlance, should be an active listening. It should be critical listening. We shouldn't read the words of Jesus just mining them for information. We should study, question, and integrate these words into our lives. Just as we read in Deuteronomy in the passage that we know as the Shema, keep these words that I am commanding you today in your hearts. These words of Jesus should be in our hearts. Our own words and our own actions should reflect the words of Jesus. We should live by his words to love our enemies and feed the hungry, to care for the widow and orphan, not because we memorize these words in vacation Bible school, but because these verses have become part of the fabric of our being. Listening to Jesus is a form of discipleship. To listen to Jesus is to follow him just as if we were walking from village to village in Galilee with him. But listening to Jesus is also a lifetime commitment. It's not a one and done. We can't just read a gospel and say, I've done that, moving on. I mean, look at the disciples. Although they were with him every day, it took years for them to understand who Jesus was and what his words meant. Even after viewing the transfiguration themselves, Peter, John, and James had moments when they slipped into their old habits. Finally, one more reason that God ended Peter's let's build tents proposal was to force the disciples back down the mountain. Mountaintop experiences are wonderful, but they are not meant to last. To be a follower of Jesus is not just to live in the rarefied air of the mountaintop. To be a follower of Jesus is to climb down to where the people are. To be a follower of Christ is to share the gospel with all people, to tell the world that Jesus is the Son of God. And to follow Christ, we have to listen. And that is tough, because there is always a violent cacophony of distractions demanding our attention. Sometimes it becomes so loud that we feel we can't hear anything at all. The noise is deafening. It's drowned out all around us and claims our attention. And so it is especially then that we must recommit our call to follow Christ and listen to him.